Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for another of the most scintillating hour in finance radio. For those of you just joining us, that is said every week with tongue very much in cheek. And like I always say, I'm not lying when I say that. It just happens to be a one-horse race. But we're taking the, as always, we'll take the medal, baby. We'll take the win. Anyway, got a great show planned for you today. A little bit of this is going to be on the fly because I am in the process of trying to lock in a last minute interview to discuss something I think that is really important. And it's something that I just do not hear enough people talking about. And it is the Chinese energy crisis or pending Chinese energy crisis. And obviously that plays in, to a lot of the things that we've been talking about, you know, going clear back to last October, talking about how we believed it was a generational time to invest in energy prices. And I think that this is a, I don't want to backtrack here, but as a quick aside, when I bring up the fact that other people were saying, don't touch oil and energy, I'm not sticking my chest out and bragging. Okay, if you do this enough times, you know you're going to get certain things right, you're going to get certain things wrong. But I really want to point something out, that you see scenarios like energy, especially where it was at and those energy stocks, where they were at last summer, even early last fall. And not all of them are going away, right? The world is not going to quit needing oil. For the Kathy Wood fans out there, I'd encourage you to go read her recent releases about the oil conversation. And look, her simplistic form of research, and by that I do not mean to dog her, a lot of her calls have been correct in terms of price. However, like I've told you many times, all of the milestones, especially as it relates to Tesla, about why Tesla would hit those price targets, they never occurred. They still have not. So sometimes you can be wrong on the underlying fundamental research and be right on the price targets. I think that her simplistic view is really going to bite her, and it certainly has this year. Now, she had an incredible year last year, and I don't think her performance is sagging at all over the last 5 years. But having said that, I think her research typifies a lot of the ways people are looking at that. I think that you've had this run in technology stocks and everything materials for so long. People have come to brush off the threat of inflation because we've been talking about it for so long and it hasn't occurred. And I would encourage you to go read what she said, equating petroleum today to whale oil. And while I don't think it's a completely useless comp, I just think it's a ridiculous one in the sense that people were not reliant on whale oil to heat their homes and avoid freezing to death. People were not reliant on whale oil to get back and forth to their jobs, right? To to make a living so they could buy food. People did not rely on whale oil to charge their electric vehicle. And to me, I don't mean to pick on her. And look, when you make comments like this, you put yourself out on a limb. And I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with that because looking at the underlying data, looking at the underlying information that we can, even if she's proven right, I think the risk is very much on the other side, right? So again, just comes back down to bad risk management, in my opinion. But I just think that that's a lot of people's view out there, and that's why so much of the stuff in the energy markets is still such a buy, at least in terms of valuation. Again, nothing is for sure. I don't think you should have your entire portfolio in this stuff. Right, but I think it's an important thing to point out, getting back to my original point, that when you want to make a lot of money in investments, you inherently have to buy things that people don't like, right? Because those are the things that can go up the most. Because when people don't like them, they tend to trade at a level below where they're actually worth, right? And then when something happens that changes that investor psychology, that stock typically goes and starts trading for more than it's worth. The swing in that, right, just the company getting back to where it should be worth. In the case of Peabody Energy that I've told you about, and Sandridge Energy, and ConocoPhillips, and Enterprise Partners, we've got a ton of them. But I use Peabody Energy as an example because it's the worst of the worst, right? It's coal. People go, coal is evil. Tell that to the people that will freeze to death over the course of the winter if they don't have it. Right? I know we want a clean environment, but do you want people starving to death? Would you want coal outlawed or gotten away with if that was the only plausible way for you to heat your home and take care of your family? Probably not. But you look at the run Peabody Energy has had. We bought it at $3.80. Was it four? Yeah, $3.80 a share, right around there. Today, it's trading right around 16. It was as high as 19. We sold a big part of the position at 19, bought some more at 13 about a week and a half ago. Again, not recommending this for your portfolio, but using it as an example. Peabody Energy is still not back to where it should be in terms of its asset base, its valuation, but it's getting close. Now, I don't think at these levels there's still any optimism priced into the stock. Again, this is not a recommendation. Please don't. The other thing, guys, is when we talk about a stock, it is entirely possible that 4 days after we discuss it, it could be gone from the portfolio. Okay, so please don't trade on that stuff, all right? Now, if you want to do your own research and you like it for reasons that are your own, you know, go ahead and do it. I'm just saying, do not trade on my stuff, please. I don't want anybody to get hit and then find out, you know, later that we sold it a week after we were talking about it. This is purely an illustration. But my point is, like Cuppy said on our using a little bit of colorful language on the deep dive segment, but his point was is that you make the most on stocks when the situation goes from hopeless to just kind of bad. Again, not the words he used, right? And the problem is that buying at those levels, buying those kinds of things, that's what gives you all your amplitude. Those are the kind of things that can give you 5 to 6X winners over the space of months. Now, that's not why you buy them. Nobody knows how fast something's going to go up. But that's how you find, though, that kind of amplitude. And you don't find it all the time, right? There are people that do it, but I don't believe that you can build an investment thesis around that. I think that could be part of what you do. But my whole point is that to be a very good investor, you have to be prepared to buy things when other people aren't. And to do that, you have to be able to turn down the noise and look at the fundamentals, right? I think back to 2008, Buffett put out a letter in December of 2008 when the entire world was falling apart and said this was probably a good time to start buying and that they would start buying at that point, right? I remember people going, the old man's finally lost it. I thought that, right? Now, the bottom was still 3 months away, but my point is when you look at a long-term chart, when Buffett started buying in December of 2008, the difference between that and the bottom looks like just a blip, right? Over the long term, he was buying incredible value. And that's one of the things that we have to keep in mind. A lot of times, the best investment decisions we make are the ones that are the scariest, if we're doing it correctly. Now, that doesn't mean we buy something because it's down. The other thing is when a stock gets beat down that much, there's something wrong. Okay, so it's not that everybody's wrong. It's not that things look great for the company. It's that they're overbaking how bad it is. And that when we're right, what we're capitalizing on is the space between their over, you know, their excessive pessimism and reality. And then when you get lucky, something dynamic will happen and reality actually change and makes the intrinsic value of the company actually go higher. In the case of BTU, it's this energy crisis going on in China. And you combine those two things and they can be extremely powerful forces to the upside. The other things is those stocks tend to be the ones that are shorted the most. So you can even get some short squeeze action. But to do that, You've got to have an iron stomach. You've got to be able to buy the things that Jim Cramer and other people are telling you not to. And they're not telling you not to because they're stupid. They're telling you not to because that's not how they like to do it, right? They like to buy things that look good. And there's room for that too. But when you want those really big wins and you want to take advantage of those types of situations, which when the setup is... Sandridge Energy is a perfect example. Cuppy talked about this on our deep dive interview. When he got involved in Sandridge Energy, they were buying it for a discount. It was trading at a discount to their cash on hand. So what that means is it was trading at half of their cash on hand. So what that essentially meant was... is that the market thought all their assets were worth negative. Right? It's laughable. And so what we look at situations like that and we just look at solvency. We sit there and go, hey, can this company stay solvent for long enough for these assets not to be worth negative? And if we think the answer is yes, it's kind of an easy buy. Doesn't mean it always works out. But the reason I like those situations is that we can take a flyer on those things with 1 or 1.5% of the portfolio, right? So if we lose 50%, it's a 0.75% hit to the portfolio. But if we catch it right, like a Bed Bath & Beyond, we can make 10, 11X. Right? That can boost the portfolio value to 15%. It can, that one 1.5% investment can deliver a 15% pop to the portfolio. So when I sit there and look at a setup like that, I go, no, the answer is not to not buy anything. The answer is to take some small, very well-researched bets. Especially in the oil and natural gas fields last year when we were talking about it. Because regardless of the pessimism, I know that there's still a market for those stuff. Again, people can't heat their homes. People can't charge their electric vehicles. You know, take China, for instance, and we're going to talk about this, but 70% of their power comes from coal. Okay, so even if they jump on board with the rest of the world and start converting to coal, it's going to take a while, guys. They can't go from 70% grid usage down to 40% in a year. You can't build enough, right? So as more and more people are coming into the economy and coming out of the third world parts of China and coming into the first world, even if they don't have population growth, their energy usage growth is going to continue. So you could see the percentage of coal, right, the percentage of the power grid that it makes up, you could see that percentage going down and yet overall coal usage continuing to rise. And like I've told you guys 100 times, what we do here in the United States, what happens in France, what happens in Italy has almost zero bearing on this. If India and China continue to use more fossil fuels, demand's going up. They represent roughly 40% of the world's population. So I look at the Kathy Woods of the world, and I think these people are just talking their own book. I don't think they're purposely trying to mislead you. I just don't think they're looking at the underlying data. Now, do I think you should load your portfolio up and that's the only thing you should own? No, because there are no guarantees in this world, and that'd be horrible risk management. But to not have exposure or to sit there and just say it's going the way of whale oil... You know, the other thing, let's look at whale oil, right? You think oil's like whale oil? Was whale oil propelling the ships that were actually capturing the whales? No. It's just such a horrible comp, right? You have to have oil to ship Tesla cars around the world. So anyway. And guys, the other side of it too is where you find your best investments is when it disagrees with the mainstream. Now, that doesn't mean you should do it all the time, right? Dory and I have talked a lot about this because he and I both have big contrarian streaks in us. And I mean, personally, we've talked about it. And I think being a contrarian is great, but you got to pick your spots, right? Because it can hurt too. And you don't want to be a contrarian for the sake of being a contrarian. But when you see the fundamentals and the momentum line up behind that contrarian play, you got to lay your chips down and place your bets. because that's where the amplitude is. And like I said, it's all about managing the risk and not oversizing that. And again, I'm not advising you guys go in that. I will say this, though. What I will advise you to do that I think will drastically improve your returns, if you out there with a normal, and this is another example of us giving away information that will help you on your own, right? I've said it a million times. We're not just out to round up clients and have you guys call. And I want people to actually get good information, things that help them even on their own journey, even if that means they don't go to us. But here's the one thing you can do. Energy right now, and the energy related stuff makes up about a 3.5-4% weight in the S&P. That historical weighting is 11. If you're out there with a normal mutual fund or ETF setup, make sure that your portfolio weighting to petroleum and energy and all those connected things, make sure that that exposure is at least at that historical average of 11. Okay, that's the one piece of it. Because if you just own the S&P 500, you're not at 11. You're at one third of that, right? If you just own mutual funds, they're going to look remarkably like the S&P 500. You probably need to add an ETF like XLE. XLE is a bunch of energy producers, different kinds of energy. They're all kind of packaged in there together. You guys can use that to round out your performance. Don't try to trade it. Or you round out your portfolio. Don't try to trade it back and forth. But like I said, you know, for instance, if you've got an S&P 500 ETF, and that's your entire portfolio, you got $1 million in there, throw 80 grand at XLE. And that'll put you right around that historical average of 11%. Okay, we're running through here, Darren. Don't be nervous. I know my time here, right? I gotta stop us at, let's see here, people. I am turning over a new leaf. I'm going to be good on the time. I gotta stop at 25 minutes, right? Right, Darren? 23. Okay, so 23 in. Then does that, I'm sorry, guys, you're going to be a part of the producing here. Does that count the first 3 minute segment? It doesn't. Okay, so I gotta go to 26 total. Got it. Okay. All right. Thanks for bearing with me. Okay, let's get into a little bit more on the market update. The knife fight continues. Here's something really interesting that I want you guys to look at. It's even better if you can do it on an overlay chart. So if you look at energy stocks and you look at the Russell 2000, obviously they were the stars of the show for the first half of the year. And they got hit a little bit. They pulled back. Some of them pulled back 25-30% from their highs. That's typically normal in a bull market, so that's of no alarm. And then they went sideways. Remember how I was saying that, you know, the value stuff and everything had slowed down and went sideways, that our portfolio was just washing back and forth? And during that same period of time, tech rallied. Didn't rally nearly as much as that stuff had in that year, but tech played catch up over the next couple months. And then recently, and this consolidation pattern you see, and it's a pretty defined one on a technical analysis side, it's a very strong indicator. And all of a sudden now you see that stuff, the value stuff and the Russell breaking out to the upside at the same time tech is rolling down. The line in the sand we're looking at in the NASDAQ is right around 14,200. I think if you break that level on a technical basis, and again, looking at the overvaluation of that, looking at the rise in interest rates, you could see some carnage there. But again, to me, I don't think that you can look at that one way or another, or even place your bets if that's what you're trying to do, until you see the NASDAQ cross below that 14,200 level. That's the level we're keeping an eye on. On XLE, watching for the energy breakout, I think that metric is right around 57 to the upside. So that would, if I see XLE break 57, I would say, okay, it looks like energy's off and running again, and you could have a really good finish to the end of the year. Let's see where that's at. It's currently right at 54. So this is what's interesting to me, is that you've got the energy sector, you've got the Russell 2000 within just a few percentage points of those previous highs set 6 months ago. When you look at that sideways movement, that sideways grind when we've had in those things for the last 6 months, if you break through that previous high, Katie bar the door, you should be looking at a really powerful rally to the upside. And that's what's so interesting to me, is at the same time these are flirting with the upside, the NASDAQ's flirting with the downside. It's currently right around 14,500 as we sit today. Again, you're only 1.5-2% away, about 2% away from that previous resistance and support level there. Would really like to see how that you know, how that flushes out. You're seeing a rally in NASDAQ again today, and it's the weakest out of all of the indexes by far. It makes me nervous to even say this, guys, because obviously we're positioned for this. You guys know I've been talking about this all year, the knife fight, somebody's got to win. It looks at this point as if energy and small. I'm still not going to declare that, though, until you see a breakout. Nothing would surprise me. What is funny to me is that this knife fight we've been talking about for 6 months, it's coming down to exactly that. The NASDAQ bumping up against its downside support, the value and energy stuff bumping against its upside resistance. And what I'm just hoping is that you don't get a reversal here and we're stuck in this range for the next, which is possible. Anything's possible. But I will say this, the other thing that encourages me about this setup right now is that the fundamental winds are behind this other stuff. The winds, right? As in gust, not W-I-N, not Russell Wilson wind. Wind. But those fundamental winds are behind the value in the energy side of it. So, and if that occurs, I really think that you could be looking at kind of a repeat of what we saw in the first quarter, where just value and energy just rips to the upside. So hopefully, I'm knocking on wood. Again, you know, I'm going to be honest with you and tell you, I don't have any special insight. I'm just saying that I get excited when the charts start replicating our outlook. And the charts start confirming and that outlook also jives with the fundamental picture. It just, you have all those things lining up. So we want to keep an eye on that, but it's still a little too early to tell. Again, really interesting article, guys, to lend credence to what I'm talking about. Barron's put out a really interesting article today. I've actually, or in this last week, I've posted it to my Twitter page, at KYR Radio. If you want to see my Twitter page, you don't even have to have a Twitter account, guys. You can just Google the @ and KYR Radio. My Twitter page will pull up and you can just click on the link and it'll take you right to the Twitter page. If you want to go do that, you can go read that article from Barron's that I posted this week. It should be 4 or 5 tweets from the top. And it talks about the impending doom of the 60-40 portfolio. Okay. This last week was a perfect example. If you've got stocks and bonds, the market got hit, your bond portfolio got hit slightly worse or right around the same amount. Buckle up, guys. That's what inflation looks like. Okay, the rest of the world is waking up to it. The fact your advisor isn't, or your robo-advisor online isn't, they're going to tell you to stick with it. If you stick with it, you are signing up for pain. If you don't want to sign up for pain, if you believe me in that there's a better way to do this, where we can lower your fees, lower your risk, increase your upside, guys, call us. It takes 3 minutes. Get a portfolio review for no cost. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. Follow us on Twitter, at KYR Radio. Also, look for the interviews on the website or on the podcast. Quick note, we got to stick in here. If you're listening on 770 KTTH, we will be ending shortly here to go cover the WSU game, but you can switch over, listen to us on 97.3 Cairo FM. We'll also be re-airing the show tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. And as always, guys, you can just go to the podcast at KYR, Know Your Risk Radio Podcast, download and subscribe to the segment there and catch the rest of the show. We'll be right back. Stick with us. This is the Know Your Risk Radio Podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss, but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. So let's get into this. Obviously, and we spent some time talking about this on the virtual roadshow that we did yesterday. And obviously, and we've talked about it on the show, the inflation is very much on everybody's mind. It's become a hot topic after being ignored for so long. And something curious came up this week, and I just thought it was a perfect example of how inflation works and how the best intentions, right? That's the old saying, right? The road to hell is paved with good intentions. And I think that as a culture, it's really helpful, especially on the investing side, to look at things through a lens of not trying to determine or the intention behind something, right? I think we are getting in a lot of trouble as a culture. If you look at the political divide in this country, it really isn't, in my opinion, it's not nearly as fundamental as most Americans think. I think you got whack jobs on the fringes that are the loudest, but I don't think the average American is far apart as what we think. I think the reason that it appears like that to so many of us is because our interpretation of somebody else's opinion or the actions that they want to take, oftentimes we broadcast or we extrapolate or we graph onto those people the intention that we think that they have, right? We're sitting there saying that you like this policy because this is your underlying intention. You know, you like tax cuts because you don't care about poor people, right? Or, you know, to flip it around and go, you know, you like tax cuts because you want to just stick it to the rich and you want a socialist government, right? And I think there's a lot of room in the middle of that. But anyway, so I don't want to get into that game of broadcasting intentions, because I think a lot of this stuff is actually done with good intentions. But in the world of adults, like I tell my kids all the time, guys, I appreciate that you're sorry. I also appreciate that you didn't mean to. But whether you meant to or not doesn't mean that the rest of the world does not have to deal with the fallout or the ramifications of the choices you make. And I think that this new budget proposal situation is a perfect example of that, right? We're going to pass a $3.5 trillion bill, and we're going to finance it all with tax cuts or tax hikes. Okay, let me explain to you, and it will cost us nothing. Okay, we're all adults here, and we all understand that there is no free lunch. I also don't think Pelosi and Biden are being completely disingenuous when they say that. I think that that's the way they actually look at it. That money will be taxed from the rich. They will pay for this. It will cost us nothing. Here's where they are wrong. Okay? Those tax increases are increased costs. The richest people in this country that have the most financial flexibility will position accordingly. And maybe it's just rerouting a certain amount of their business offshore that used to be onshore, not moving their entire company. But if you're a massive global company, you can make up for that tax hike by just, you know, moving some things around, maybe firing up the old factory that was in Brazil that you haven't used for a while just to get some of that production offshore. There's a lot of different things you can do. But here's what will happen. Though that increased tax load will filter down through the economy, it will add to inflationary pressures, therefore pushing up the price of goods, and those goods will be purchased by the average consumer. And the lower your income is, the bigger percentage of your income that price increase will represent. This is a yet another example of not only will we pay for it, but the people that will pay for it the most are the people at the lowest end of the economic spectrum. Okay, that's the way this works. The same is true on the energy side. I don't think that Biden's energy policy is completely stupid by means of what he is trying to accomplish. I think, and I cannot confirm this, but I think that they are doing things that will purposefully push up the price of energy, mainly oil, not too drastically or not too fast, because in their minds, they're trying to thread a needle. They want to push the price of oil and energy higher, because the higher the price of energy and oil go, right, the more elasticity in terms of pricing that electric car companies have, right? Because the higher that cost of oil goes, the higher the cost of ownership of a traditional vehicle goes. Okay, but what typically happens in these situations, because bureaucrats are laying out these plans and not people that have, you know, that are practitioners of financial markets and actually understand the way that these things work. So what typically happens is they way overshoot. And I think that that's what's going to happen on the energy side. And that's a perfect example. If they overshoot, and you get a perfect storm in energy markets, and like I said, you've got plenty of fundamental drivers out there to make that happen, and you get $150 to $200 barrel of oil, who gets hurt? Right? It's the person with the lowest income. The guy that has to drive to work every day. The truck driver. The independent semi-truck driver. Right? One, his single biggest cost just tripled. Right? So, and that's a perfect example. You're always going to pay for this stuff. And the people who inflation hurts the worst are the people that are the lowest on the economic scale. And I know that that is not their intention. I don't believe that that is their intention. You may. Okay, but don't be mad at me. If you do believe that that's their intention, don't be mad at me, because I don't. Right? Don't be mad at me because I don't. Because regardless of whether I believe in that that's their intention or not, the outcome will be the same. The investment outcome will be the same. Right? It doesn't matter. The reason why I try to assume that that's not their goal is it does me no good. If I start believing that, then I start believing these people are evil and they're out to stick it to the small. Politics start leaking into my portfolio outlook again. I got to be aware of the political winds, but I cannot play them. It's why I've tried to tell you, you know, I know that there was a lot of talk that, you know, if Biden got elected, that would crush markets. Well, what did I sit there and say? I go, guys, it's like the quarterback of a football team. They get way too much credit for the win. They get way too much blame for the loss. And presidents do not make nearly as big an impact on markets as people think they do. And the funny thing about that is, depending on when you say that, you're going to tick off half the country. Right? So, but this is a perfect example of the pernicious aspects of inflation. And when I hear them say we're not going to pay for it, I know what they're talking about. I understand the logic they're using. And I actually think they believe it. I mean, I think that history would show you that these people don't know what they're doing when it, you know, these are the kind of people that literally didn't think that there was an issue in real estate. And I hate bringing that up as an example right now or at all anymore, because everybody claims that they saw it coming. And I saw it coming in terms of how that the real estate market was going to implode. I did not understand how that you know, had metastasized into the banks and then had metastasized all around the entire global economy. But I can just tell you, most people didn't see it coming, because I was in the investment world at that time and I felt like a moron, because I was one of the, you know, everybody's looking at me going, you don't understand, you don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. And there was a time where I thought, shoot, they were right. Maybe I was just completely wrong. But my point in bringing that up is these people, you know, they're going to make these mistakes over and over, and we don't need to determine whether their cause is just, right, or whether we agree with their intentions. The intentions don't matter. What is the effect going to be? The effect is going to be that tax is going to get passed off right on down the line, and it is going to punish. And the way you look at it, again, is really simple. How does a tax affect people? Well, look at the increased cost and look at that increased cost as a percentage of that person's annual income. Therefore, the guy with the lowest income is going to get hurt the most. Right? Because if the price of fuel goes up 3% or 300% and triples, and he's paying 10, 12 bucks a gallon of gas, right? He can't triple the cost of his plumbing work or truck driving expenses. He can pass some of that on. But he's just looking at lower margins. And I want you to watch this play out, because they say no one's going to pay. You are going to pay for it. There's just no way around it. I mean, the fact that we have so many adults in this country that think that they can still have their cake and eat it too, it's shocking to me. You know, where are the adults at? Where are the people saying, are you kidding me? You think you're going to flood the market with that much money and do all those things, and you don't think someone's going to pay for it? And that's not the way the world works, right? That money comes from somewhere. And what's the difference between inflation and the tax? There is none. So this is why I think the bond situation is so pernicious and so damaging to people. And so many people, look, a lot of people are getting the message. I mean, that's why the size of our firm is, you know, grown by 5x. You know, since we started on the radio show, I think a lot of people are waking up to this, but unfortunately not nearly enough and not near fast enough. And they're getting a ton of bad information. We were doing the virtual road show yesterday, and this feeds right back into the bond discussion, if you will. We're doing the virtual road show today, and somebody was on there listening to our presentation, and I'm pretty sure that they worked for a competitive firm. And they went into this diatribe. There's a section where you can type in questions. And went into this diatribe about, I can't believe you guys are fiduciaries and advocating fixed indexed annuities. You just want to charge people commissions. And then they sent me a link to a podcast that I needed to listen to. And I'm not above learning. I'm not putting these people down. But the minute the podcast came through, I instantly recognized the name of the guy that does the podcast. And I knew his firm. And what he was doing is he was giving me a podcast to a guy that runs an entire firm using a fund family called Dimensional Funds. And this guy believes wholeheartedly in the traditional asset allocation model and, you know, this much in bonds, this much stocks, and you can't listen to these guys. And I go through and I'm listening to this podcast. And first of all, the guy claims he's talking about indexed annuities. He's not. He's talking about variable annuities again and getting it completely confused, because all he's doing is relying on the dogma of annuities are bad. Annuities are bad. You're like, yes, would you learn a new trick? Because annuities have beat the pants off of bonds. If you've used them the way we have, used them correctly, the right kinds, they beat the pants off of bonds for 15 years. Right? When the facts change, your opinion does too. Second of all, no knock on this guy, but he's not a money manager. The guy's never run a portfolio in his life. He sells mutual funds. And then, oh, by the way, go ask him the performance of the portfolio, right? That's one of the ultimate tests you can do. When you hear these guys that sit there and claim that, oh, this is bad and this is good and but, you know, I know what I'm talking. Let's see. We've had this condition of 0% interest rates for about 14 years now, 15 years, something like that. And in that environment, Bulwark has been advocating the use of annuities. Let's see how their annuities have performed compared to your bond portfolio. Oh, well, that's not a good. Why not? You're saying that one is good and one is bad. Let's look at the performance. And what I will tell you is that the average annuity contract that our clients hold have outperformed their bond portfolios by about 2.5 times over the last 13 years. So when I listened to this guy's reasons for why annuities were bad, I just laughed, because at no point did he compare them to bonds. The other thing that was funny is he goes, if you're worried about bonds getting hit by interest rates, we can put your bonds in a 10-year ladder. Now, 5 minutes before that, he was talking about one of the horrible things about the annuity is that it's a 10-year contract. Okay, the annuity has 10% free annual withdrawals. Stick with me here. I really want you guys to get this. Okay, the annuity has 10% free annual withdrawals. The bond ladder is laid out by 10 years. That means that every year, 10% of your bond contract comes due, 10% of your bond portfolio comes due, right? You get your original investment back and you can redeploy it. And that protects you from rising interest rates because every year, 1/10 of your portfolio is coming free and you can reinvest it in bonds at those higher interest rates, right? It helps offset the pain of rising interest rates. And it also keeps you from taking capital losses on your bonds. But what happens if interest rates rise and you go to sell 50% of your bond portfolio? You're going to take a hit on the value of your bonds, right? And that hit could be anywhere from 1% to 20%. Would it be fair to call that hit a surrender charge, right? So you're sitting there telling me that the 10-year contract that guarantees your portfolio from loss, that's really unfair. At the same time, you're going to advocate a 10-year bond ladder to me, but if I violate that bond ladder, I'll take a hit. How is that different from a surrender charge? Right? The only difference, the reason we pick the one over the other, is because it makes two and a half times as much on average. It costs nothing and it's insured against loss. You're going to hear people get on the radio or the TV and sound really convincing, make you think that they're the expert and know everything. And one of the tricks to find out whether they're a charlatan is when they don't do good comps. Don't sit there and start comparing the annuity to stocks. Stocks have lost, 90% in a year before. Compare it to bonds. Explain to me why you're charging me a percent and a half, half of my yield, or 60% of my annual yield. Explain why you're charging me that for a bond portfolio that net of fees is making me 1.5% when you've got 5% inflation. And oh, by the way, if they've got to start ratcheting those interest rates because inflation's going to go higher, I'm going to get pounded. Everything you've told me about annuity is completely useless. It is mentally exhausting because anybody that looked at it for what it was, and they're like, oh, you're selling it to get a commission. Hey, guys, remember, everything is on. Typically, annuities pay a 6 to 7% commission. Okay? So, yeah, if you have us allocate, let's say you got a $3.5 million portfolio and we decide that $1 million of that portfolio is suitable to put in an annuity, yeah, we could potentially have a $60,000 commission. That seems like a ton, right? Now, lucky for us, a lot of these annuity contracts are turning to fee-based models. So, increasingly, more and more of the products that we use and the products we want to use offer to pay us 1% a year. I'd prefer that. It's called math. If I'm charging you 1% on a bond portfolio that is making 1.5% to 2% a year, how much am I going to make over the course of 10 years? A heck of a lot more than the 6% I made on the annuity. How much are you going to make? A heck of a lot less than you made would have made in the annuity. Who cares? I hate it when people make everything about commissions. Sometimes commissions are worth it, right? What's an example? The most successful hedge fund in the world, Renaissance Capital, based out of Chicago. They charge a 5% management fee, and then they take 40% of all profits they make. Net of all fees, since inception in 1987, they've averaged 36% returns. My point in saying, A, when he says annuities pay advisor more than bonds, he's full of it. That's factually incorrect. It is absolutely factually incorrect. Okay, B, even if you have to pay more in commissions, that doesn't necessarily make it a bad investment. Would you pay 5% a year and 40% of all profits to average a 36% a year return? God knows I would. So when you hear this, you need to recognize that these people are often talking anecdotally. They also, most of the time, don't know what they're talking about. They buy into a fund company called Dimensional Funds, which aren't bad. Their model sucks, and it's been proven outdated, and they've horribly underperformed over the last 10 years, which is why they've had tons of outflows. He doesn't talk about that. Right, he's just going to go blast annuities and never tell you what his bond performance was in relation to the annuities. When anybody tells you something is good or bad, your first question should be in comparison to what? Right? Because that's the game we play. I think this stock is good in comparison to what? I think this fund is good in comparison to what? Because if you don't give me a comp, I've got no context. You want to know what things look like when you take context out of it? You look at our culture today. Right, there's no context. There's void of context. And I get fired up about this because not intentionally, but they're robbing people of hundreds of thousands of dollars. They could have converted their fixed income portfolios into one of these other products, been infinitely more safe, and made substantially more money while paying less fees. I don't care what it's called. And I don't care what you say the downsides are, because the more I listen to you talk, I know that you don't even understand the downsides of the investments you're selling. And every investment's got one. I know what ours are. And what I'm telling you is the downsides to the product that you decry and say is a violation of our fiduciary duty is one of the biggest reasons that we're crushing you in performance over the last decade. And it's one of the biggest reasons our clients pay 40%, 50% less in fees. Oh, I just get fired. If you're going to get out there and talk to the investing public, at least know what you're talking about. And if you put it on a podcast, everybody all of a sudden believes. The other thing, look what the big players are doing. I know a company that packages really high quality annuities aimed at the retired registered investment advisor world, aimed at professional money managers like me. And they do that because they recognize the problem with bonds. Okay, BlackRock bought a 25% stake in this company for like almost $1 billion. If it's such a bad investment, why do you think BlackRock's getting in there? They're not buying a bond company because they see the writing on the wall. They see that they look at all of this money in retail bonds and they know it's got to find a new home, right? They're skating to where the puck is. Meanwhile, I hear guys like this, not only are they not skating to where the puck is, they're skating in circles back behind the goalie's net. And they're not going to, truthfully, these guys will convert. They will convert to our way of thinking. Capital losses in their clients' accounts will be what makes them convert. Clients leaving their firm will make them convert. They will convert at the realization of pain, not in anticipation of it. And about the time they convert, that's probably about the time that we'll be changing our song. We'll be in here talking about how you need to get into bonds. It's just the way it works. Right? It's like last March, we were telling you, we're coming in, you know, February and January, we're saying, look, we're coming into what should be the greatest economic shock in lifetime. I had a bunch of guys cuss at me on social media about that. Well-known guys that are on CNBC all the time going, you're full of hot air. Okay. Doesn't mean I can't be wrong, but there's just so many people in this industry that won't roll their window down and take a whiff, right? Like, is a fire outside? I don't know. Don't roll your window down. You might smell the smoke. And if you want somebody, if you want a firm that's out there looking out on the horizon that will roll the window down to take a whiff, you want to know that is sitting there watching this stuff with bated breath every night, every morning, because their financial life is on the line. Their income is reliant on the performance of your portfolio, and they're not just going to stick to all the old lines and all the old rules because they understand that the world has changed. If that's what you're after, if you're looking at higher upside, less fees, somebody actively managing your portfolio that's ready to pivot at any moment and get out of the way from an oncoming train, call us, because I can tell you these guys aren't going to do it. Call us at 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Check the podcast, because I'm pretty sure we're going to do this deep dive interview. It'll be added later this weekend. Anyway, have a great weekend. Go Dogs, go Hawks. We'll see you next weekend. This is the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently, one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.